Dieter and Hutch, it's Friday. It is week 7 of the NFL season, and we're talking about the 49ers and Chiefs yet again. It is an emotional breakdown of a game. That's what this is. This is the first, the last, the everything, Jake. We've been thinking about this game in one way or another for months now.
Yeah.
Not just literally, like almost theoretically, there's an ideology right in play here. This is bigger than just a week 7 game, which in and of itself, not terribly important, except for, again, all the emotional resonance of it as well, beyond
ideologies. We were talking in like the offseason that like the whole approach is like bet on Brock Purdy and beat the Chiefs.
Like
that's fundamentally, if you get to the playoffs and you get to the Super Bowl, you have to expect that the Chiefs are going to be there. Mm-hmm. How are you going to beat them? I think some of the things they did make a lot of sense. And also I think they're fundamentally unprepared to beat them in certain specific ways, which we're about to get into.
Well, let's not dilly-dally around it. Let's get down to the brass tacks. It's something that we've talked about a million times over on this show already this season. We certainly talked about it in the Super Bowl last year. It's the simple fact of Steve Spagnuolo, after, I believe, the second drive in the Super Bowl, said, scrap the game plan, none of this zone shit anymore. We're going man-to-man, and Deebo Samuel can beat us, or we will we will win the game. And they went press man-to-man on the outside. They played man-to-man. It had to have been 8 out of every 10 snaps from that point on in the contest. In total, I know Kyle threw out a different number. He doesn't consider press and man coverage the same. For the sake of argument, we will consider them the same. I consider them the same in many ways. Obviously, there is a lot of nuance and detail and wonkiness to all of it, but not zone is what I consider man coverage. I have it at 60% in the Super Bowl, and it's ultimately what did the 49ers in. It's ultimately what led the 49ers to draft a guy like Ricky Pearsall, and wouldn't fate have it, a very strange, very tragic fate in many senses, but wouldn't fate have it that now this could be Ricky Pearsall's first game as a San Francisco 49er in a moment where the Niners not just theoretically needed him most, but now almost literally need it. Like, there is a real and present danger to not having Ricky Pearsall in this game for San Francisco, but I think we're both in agreement they're going to have him.
I think so. It's funny. I've been like asking people all week, and everyone's like, no. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, he's going to play. And I think most of that's Juwan Jennings, but the reason that's funny is because the line was like, well, when he's ready, he's ready. It's like all of a sudden Juwan's not ready, and now Ricky's ready.
Right.
I'm just
a little
saying,
bit of desperation there.
Yeah. I think we've both been on like, yeah, if he's ready, he should play. But like,
of course,
because they need him, because he can fundamentally change the offense and attack man coverage. And you look at it, and going back to that Super Bowl, I think people criticize Kyle for a lot of reasons. A lot of them are silly. A lot of them are unfair. A lot of them are just, you blame the head coach. A very legitimate reason to blame him is the way he handled the game plan in that Super Bowl, where they continued to feed the ball to Deebo Samuel and he just came up empty. Like, it was terrible.
It was 0 for 6 against man.
He had 11 targets for 3 receptions and 33 yards in the Super Bowl. You're right. All 6 targets against man coverage, no receptions. In the entire season last year, Deebo caught 7 passes on 20 targets against man coverage.
Jeez Louise.
Juwan Jennings, by the way, 11 passes, 11 catches on 15 targets. So,
yeah. So, listen, the Niners have 3 man-to-man beaters so far this season. George Kittle is a man-to-man beater. There's no question about that. Now, some of that is scheme, to be fair, when he's, you know, chipping and releasing, things like that. And you oftentimes get George Kittle against a safety or a linebacker. You better win in man-to-man if you're George Kittle, who is arguably the finest tight end in the NFL. You have Brandon Ayuk, who does win in man consistently. Not always, but consistently. And Brock Purdy just does not look his way. That can change at any point, but to this point, he has not looked Brandon Ayuk's way as a number one option in this offense. I tie that back to not having him during training camp and not building up those physical reps and just the install reps of having an X wide receiver who would get open against man coverage. But Juwan Jennings has been a man beater. Now, is the separation good? No, but he is able to run crisp, effective routes, get to his spots. He can run a little bit of a scramble drill, as we saw against Seattle.
And especially an off man, he's great.
No question. And so, as you should be, if you're an NFL wide receiver and you can't win an off man, what the hell are we doing here? But even if you were to press him, and honestly, the way that he runs, most of the times it ends up with him getting pressed. If it's 3 yards past the line of scrimmage or five, he's getting pressed because he's not fast. But Brock has been willing to rifle in balls because he can find just that bit of separation. Again, the guy that they don't have in this situation who would be a game changer and was a game changer in the Super Bowl, 66 yards after the catch against man coverage, only 56 yards receiving. You can see where I'm going here. Christian McCaffrey. You don't have him. You're not forcing teams to play man-to-man. And then Deebo Samuel, who has 4 catches on 11 targets in man-to-man this season. It's everything we knew. Nothing has changed. And what do you think Kansas City is going to do? Not only will they, I believe, copy their game plan from the Super Bowl, I don't think they have any choice but to copy their game plan from the Super Bowl. We'll get into the blitz stuff a little bit later, but suffice it to say, when you blitz, like the Kansas City Chiefs love to do, like they should do, because that is statistically what they're best at, and they have proven to be best at that, you have to play man behind it. So Pearsall getting into the mix, almost as a replacement for Jennings, more so than Deebo, but it could be huge for the 49ers in the sense of this, Jake. You can take Deebo off the field in what you think are going to be clear man-to-man sets. If you think this rep is definitely going to be a man-to-man, and Kyle Shanahan's going to have a better read on that than you or I, then you can take Deebo off the field, put him in operational situations that are more beneficial to his skill set, give him some time off, which frankly he looks like he needs, get Pearsall in there, ease him in situations that, no, man-to-man's not easy. Zone is a lot easier to go up against, but it's a situation where because he's a sudden route runner, because he can break off at a level that I don't think any other Niners receiver can, because you get wide receiver coach Leonard Hankerson during drills going, like having orgasmic yells during drills that you hear from across 3 practice fields, like because he can do that, get him in there in sets as the flanker, as the Z receiver. And I think that you have an opportunity to move the ball here against a defense that is really, really impressive.
I'm with you. And I honestly think there is something to putting Deebo out there if McDuffie's going to guard him. And you say, okay, well, if McDuffie is going to stay on him, then, okay, Jalen Watson versus Ayuk is a really good matchup. It's funny, I asked Ayuk, who doesn't talk to media anymore, basically.
He hates us.
He's like, I don't have time. Got nothing for you. I'm like, what about Jalen?
I'm too fucking rich to talk.
I'm like, I'm trying to ask you not a football question. And I was like, what about Jalen Watson? He's like, thought about an answer. And he's like, I got to watch more tape. I don't know. I was like, all right. Well,
I've watched the tape. Jalen Watson is impressive.
He is really impressive. I think he can get beat over the top.
Yes.
But if he sticks with you and he gets leverage and he gets into your body, like it's pretty tough to beat him. I think going back to Deebo real quick, if McDuffie is guarding him, you get some advantageous situations. We talked about the simplicity of the offense kind of against the Seahawks and why they should lean into that. I think part of that is definitely necessary in this game. Teams know that Kansas City's front and Chris Jones and Tershawn Wharton and Mike Pinnell, it's just beefy. Teams run outside the tackles on Kansas City constantly because they know they can't go inside. So I think there is something to that stretch zone runs. And while Kansas City allows like the third fewest explosive runs in the league, which is crazy, they're incredibly good at tackling.
Yes.
They also haven't faced Jordan Mason, who has the most rushing yards over expected, second most rushing yards over after contact. Only Derrick Henry's above him.
Right.
So there is something to that if the shoulder's right. And Isaac Garendo, I think, is starting to feel himself a little bit.
He should.
And then the last thing I'll say real quick on the sort of man coverage thing is if you do spread it out, I think Kittle's going to beat Nick Bolton one-on-one, because I've seen a lot of worse tight ends beating Bolton when they spread it out and they get him isolated. I think this could be a really big Kittle game.
Well, if Foster Moreau can do it, certainly George Kittle can do it. You're also talking Leo Chanel, the weak side linebacker, who's fine in coverage. He's a fine player. And that's honestly what stands out most to me about this Kansas City defense. A lot of the players are just fine. Like, they don't have, outside of Jones, a superstar. But they are so sound at what they do, and they're so schematically appropriate for Spags. Just has guys that he can trust to do what they need to do time and time again. So you talk about Bolton in coverage. Yeah, it's a big question mark. You don't want Bolton opening up his hips, but nobody's better at finding the gaps in the run game. Yep. And if you can beat him in the run game, if you can get to that outside point and beat Nick Bolton to the outside, you got daylight for days, because not only are they really good, the one spot that they're not good at tackling is nickelback. The one guy, the Connor, their nickelback, cannot tackle. And you have to imagine that Kyle has seen that and is going to try to get this team into 11 personnel sets, or at least have some, maybe even flex out Kittle off of the line and try to get a nickelback onto the field as to allow them to run directly at him the way that they did Sauce Gardner against the New York Jets. There were obviously a lot more weak points on other defenses around there, but I'm very curious to see how Kyle attacks this. I think there's obviously, in our ideal world, you're building off of the, you know, play action, stretch run, boot plays, things of that nature. I'm not sure you can necessarily do that against Kansas City, even though it's ideologically sound. We'll get into why I think this could be a real issue for San Francisco and why they might need to go back to the shotgun stuff a little bit later on in the show. But while we're on man coverage, you mentioned Jalen Watson. Watson is the second best man cover corner per PFF this season. Mm-hmm. You say that you can beat him over the top. That's factual. This guy has one catch against him in man coverage all year. One. He has two pass breakups in coverage. And if you try to break in off of him in man coverage, which is something you should want to do, right? That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're not supposed to just be running a nine all the way down the sideline. You're supposed to be breaking in. You're supposed to be forcing this guy to move his body. He somehow gets better when you make him move. There have been a couple of plays this year where it's an in-breaking route, the classic, hey, this is how you're going to beat man. Obviously, it beats zone because that's not the zone he's covering. But like, this, if you're man-to-man and you're trying to get rid of somebody, what do? You run left or run right and you force them to match. He somehow beats guys to the spot, and he has a couple of pass breakups where they're throwing the ball to him as opposed to throwing the ball to the receiver because he's so good at that. Now, McDuffie has not been good at that this year, but he's really strong at the line of scrimmage.
I'm with you. I was going to say at the line of scrimmage, Watson, third most press man snaps in the league, McDuffie 11th. Like, you're going to get all of that all day, jamming you at the line. And if it's McDuffie on Debo, he's not going to separate. But like, Spags knows his personnel. He builds around getting guys that fit that personnel. And that's why they let Legarius Sneed go, who's been terrible this year. And they're just reaping the benefits of it.
I mentioned the ideology of this one. I find it to be fascinating. Both of these teams have a stars and scrubs roster. And it's fascinating to see where the investments have gone and haven't gone on both of these teams. Something that you have been very keen on, and I would like to echo these sentiments. Interior versus interior is this game.
It's actually, these teams are like, sometimes you look at stats and you're like, oh, this team's kind of good at this thing. In this game, whatever like the 49ers are good at, it's like the inverse. Like the Chiefs are the best pass defense when they blitz. The 49ers are the worst. Mm-hmm. And it's completely flipped the other way. And you look at how they're constructed on the lines. 49ers have a very weak interior of their offensive line. It's like Brendel and Banks alternating.
They don't believe in it. They don't believe in spending money on the interior. They believe that the scheme outweighs it and you have to make sacrifices somewhere. So they say, we're not going to spend there. And meanwhile, Kansas City's going to have, on, if we're just looking offensive line, Kansas City could have $50 million invested in left guard, center, and right guard if they give Trey Smith a big deal, which they should because he's very, very good. We talked about him on Tuesday's show. Flip it around. Okay, the 49ers don't have anybody like Chris Jones, right? They've never, even DeForest Buckner doesn't come on Chris Jones's level. He's the best interior pass rusher in the league, and he's their game changer. And I'm so interested to see how Spags moves him around on money down in big play situations.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you're dealing with a weak interior offensive line, whether it's Banks or Burford, Feliciano, whatever. I guess it would just be Burford. I guess Zakelge. Left guard is a question. Center has been a question all year. And just because it's gotten better doesn't mean that it's good. And I think Dominic Pooney, despite what some are saying, I think we're holding on to the training camp notion and not watching the film.
That's what I was going to say. Is like we talked to Furster about it and someone asked about Pooney. And he's like, yeah, people have gotten more tape on him and they're starting – basically, they're starting to beat him more and more. Like,
yeah,
that's just what happens when you're a rookie and you start off hot and teams are getting a book out on him. And it's not to say he's been bad, but he's getting beat more. He wasn't really getting beat at all right to start the season, but the book is out. And so you've got that. And the Chiefs are not that dominant on the outside, but they've got Jones up the middle and they sort of funnel everything around that. I asked Trent Williams basically about Spags and like, you know, how does he run his blitzes? What are the challenges, you know, of that? And Trent got pretty specific. He's like, he mixes it up. He loves to go zero, especially at big times of the game, third and long, fourth and long, expect him to heat you up then. And then he gets into how they use Jones. He says they do a lot of blitzes away from 95 because he understands that most game plans are to double him. So at least you shorthanded on the backside. So, you know, you bring pressure, which is something the 49ers have struggled with, where teams send a DB and they're unaccounted for because the protection is either wrong or they just weren't expecting it.
Right. This is where a guy, Tershawn Wharton, is going to come into play for Kansas City. I am infatuated with his film.
Dieter's sending me Tershawn Wharton clips yesterday.
He's built strangely. He's a... narrow-hipped interior off or defensive lineman. That's a pretty rare thing to be on the interior. But he's shaped like the letter T. He's a capital T. And he is so strong and so explosive. He's not a brilliant football player. A lot of times it doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. But if you can get him one-on-one, he wins a lot. And he wins in emphatic ways. And if they're going to be blitzing, because you have Karloftis on the outside, you have Dana on the other side. Those guys are there to set edges. Okay.
Karloftis is going to be out for this game, by the way.
Okay. So now we're talking who? Where we're going?
Malik and Zurike Udoma. I'm butchering that name 100,000%.
And Duke Uzuma?
Yep.
Okay. So. That's something. But everybody, it doesn't matter who's in. Like, I'm not saying that to cover my ass here. It doesn't matter who's in. They're all built the same way. They're all five techniques.
Completely.
Okay. And they're here to set the edge. And they're here to bull rush. That's going to be an issue for the 49ers.
And McKivitz, who's been actually quietly very good this year, he had a lot of trouble against Karloftis in the Super Bowl.
No doubt about it. Because, again, bull rush. And we're talking about guys in anchoring. So, Trent had issues with the bull rush in the Super Bowl.
Pinnell beat him clean, badly, like a couple times.
And Pinnell's had a bad year this year. But again, this is something that you have harped on and needs to be reiterated. The 49ers do not like hefty, beefy boys up front. They do not like heavy defensive lines. They've always had trouble with three-man fronts, which is understandable because that typically comes along with exotic blitz packages and things of that nature. But three-man fronts also come with nobody on the wide nine, nobody at a seven. You're playing 5-1-3. I mean, if that, you got a 4-eye out there. You got dudes over shoulders. You're looking for two-gap kind of players. This defense against the run, they are outstanding. Minus 0.156 rush EPA. They have the fewest yards allowed. Now, they've played one fewer game than most teams, but like, we're still talking about 56 or 52 yards per game on the ground from running backs against the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay. You have to run outside against them. I get that. That's easier said than done when they set the edge the way that they set the edge. And now you're dealing with an offensive line that doesn't enjoy the way that this team rushes, which is complicated and straightforward. They're going to come at you from different angles. Yes. And what they're going to do is run your ass over when they reach you at that angle. That is a very dangerous combination because that is now, again, Kansas City last year, heavy guys, stuff like this, but also that sort of Baltimore, Minnesota exoticness
That's what I asked Purdy about. I asked him about, you know, that Minnesota game. And I was like, listen, like, I know no one's doing what Brian Flores is doing. Like, that much is clear. But, like, does that experience help at all? Like, in, you know, getting prepared against, you know, what your hot answer is, just basically having everything thrown at you and never knowing exactly what's coming.
Right.
And he's like, well, they're not similar at all. I'm like, I know.
Yeah,
I know. It's its own thing. But the point is, he's like stressed, like, I've got to get to my answers. I can't force it. Like, he's going to have a lot of, I have to go here. And just to go back to the other side of the Chiefs offensive line, we touched on it. They have the best interior offensive line in the league.
Yes.
The 49ers interior, Malik Collins has a knee injury. Kevin Givens missed practice yesterday with a groin injury out of nowhere. You've got Jordan Elliott coming off a knee injury. You've got Khalil Davis, who just came off IR.
Do they have any defensive tackles? Am I playing defensive tackle against Creed Humphrey?
They're probably going to have to elevate Evan Anderson again, and probably, and they might have to just put him on the active roster. I don't know what space, you know, he takes up, but like, they don't have, this
he's
is a game
flashes,
for him
to be fair.
This is a game for him. He's been pretty good. I mean,
yeah,
as much as we can joke about him, like, he's been solid, and this is a game for a guy who's just large and can anchor. And Malik Collins having a knee injury, like, they're asking so much of him. This is a game where you're like, kind of like, Khalil Davis, can you help us? Like, mm-hmm. Evan Anderson, can you help us? That's where they're at. And teams, just to finish this point, teams are running inside on the 49ers at the third highest rate in the league, between the tackles, 53% of the time. Like, they know that's where they're weak, and they go after it. And this is a week where they're looking really, really thin.
And not just that, you're going up against a team that runs almost exclusively inside zone. Now, Isaiah Pacheco
efficient at it.
Isn't there, but they got Kareem Hunt and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is coming back, and they know Carson Steele. They know what they're about when it comes to the run game. They're going to keep everything on the inside on defense, and they're going to push everything from the inside on offense. This is a team that was built from the inside out.
Yep.
The 49ers right now are a team that's built from the outside in. I'm not saying one way is right. I got a hunch on which way is right. I think that there's a couple Super Bowl trophies that indicate which way is right.
Right.
But it's not to say that there's not merit in the alternative. But the 49ers, when we're doing stars and scrubs, they went for flash and the Chiefs went for bash. And
yep,
it is, again, a fascinating ideological matchup here.
And how many times do we call it out in training camp and preseason and all that? We were like, the defensive tackle position, even if they had Javon Hargrave, he's like not a guy that anchors in the run game or did any of that.
You're
like,
still
they just didn't prioritize that in the slightest. And like, this is a game where I think that could really, really show up.
Let me throw another aspect of that your way. Nick Sorensen yesterday during his press conference defended Devondre Campbell, which is becoming a very difficult Baghdad Bob energy on that one, saying that he's done a good job. I'm not sure at what. Maybe he's just great in meetings. I'd presume he is.
He's just been bad.
He's been beyond bad, Jake. He's been fully benchable. Like, it's over. It's done. It's kaput. And it's only reason it hasn't happened is because they don't trust D Winters, and because their other option, Jalen Graham, wasn't on the fucking team 2 weeks ago. So
right. It's like Jalen Graham, Tatum Bethune. Like, you cannot put Demetrius Flanagan Fowles back out there.
He's
so
somehow
like
worse. Which is impressive in and of itself. If Kansas City's running a lot of interior and you don't have defensive tackles, much less someone on the opposite end of Nick Bosa who can set the edge, because that has been a big issue for this team as well. We talked about Sam O and his possibility of being that guy. He is still a bit player for this team. They're still running Leonard Floyd out there. You let me know what Leonard Floyd does well. You'd be the first. So
he's great at waiting for pressure and then looping up. He's genuinely very good at it.
Yeah. Well, and I talked to Bosa about that a week or so ago, and he's like, he figured out, like, if I just stand here, it will come to me. And I'm like, is that setting the edge? And he goes, yeah, it's about the same. I'm like, okay, yeah, you'll take it. But considering what he had been having beforehand when it came to setting the edge, that is an upgrade. Regardless, they are going to not just be scheming up Campbell in the passing game, which every team is doing now. You think about what Seattle did last week. this. Like, hey, first couple plays, where's 59? You think about what the Cardinals did. Where's 59? Touchdown, two plays. You think about what the Rams kept in the bag for when they really needed it. Where's 59? Oh, that's an immediate 20-something yards. Let's kick a field goal. Andy Reid off a bye, 32-6. You don't think that he spent a good deal of time looking at 59 and just drooling, saying, give me those nugs from 59? Like, it's pretty obvious. And I think they're going to scheme him up in the run game, too. If you can get that Creed Humphrey or Smith or Thuney to that second level and get somebody on Fred Warner, easier said than done, keeping on him, easier said than done. Now you got, typically you're going to leave a linebacker open there. Now you got 59 in space. That's a big issue for me.
If we are seeing it, Reed has definitely seen it. I mean, if you're Andy Reid, you're saying on runs, try and get to Fred Warner. Just like he's the guy you're focused on. Everyone else, like if there's a one-on-one, let someone else make that one-on-one tackle in space, and then chip the hell out of Bosa, hold him all game long, make the referees call it because they didn't call it in the Super Bowl, and
you gotta normalize it.
They don't love to call it against the Chiefs because their tackles are so bad that if they were to call it every time, it would be so many penalties that like it would make Chiefs games unwatchable. Correct. And I honestly think that's a factor. Jawan Taylor is terrible. Oh. They replaced, I forgot the name of their other tackle, Wanya Morris.
Yeah, Wanya Morris. They replaced Kingsley Suamatia.
These are terrible tackles. And so Bosa is going to win. He's going to have chances. But at the same time, like they're just going to throw a lot his way and bet on someone else to beat him. And I think that's a good bet to make. I think what it comes down to for the 49ers defensively is like, can you just be sound enough and weather some long, painful drives from Kansas City? Because Mahomes, people have been like saying Mahomes has been bad or whatever. Sure, he hasn't been his excellent self, but like in the regular season, he's usually not. He takes checkdowns. They run screens and short plays, and they get 64. It's funny. They have 64% of their yards on yards after catch in the pass game, which is number one in the NFL. The 49ers and their Yak Bros are dead last at like 32%. So these teams have fundamentally switched in that way, which is insane because Mahomes, this guy who used to just been chucking it down the field to Tyreek Hill every time, now he's dink and dunking you and he's saying, sure, play your zone coverage, play it soft. I'm going to take it every single time. You're going to get exhausted. You're going to make mistakes and I won't. He will, but it doesn't matter because he's Mahomes. And Just to finish that point, I asked Sorensen about like, you know, getting exhausted on those long drives. And he's like, it's how violent you finish, how well you tackle. And he used a bunch of hilarious terms that I just want to mention. He goes, are we punching it out? Are we hitting him with 2-3 guys on a compression tackle? What's the stack monster? just like awesome terms that
incredible LinkedIn buzzwords here.
Awesome stuff. But he's basically like, whether it's an RPO or perimeter screen, if they're going to catch it at 5 and get 8 or 9, that's not good. So they know they're going to take the short yards. And if they get a few more, they can do that all the way down the field.
This is a very interesting situation for the 49ers. Well, let's stick with the Sorensen buzzwords first. How violent do you finish? This is a soft ass defense. Call it what it is. They're soft. Okay. They do not bring any pop. They don't bring any punch. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. How well do you tackle? They don't tackle well at all. This is one of the worst tackling teams in the NFL. The only guy who tackles is Fred Warner. Now, he does all of it, but this is not a good tackling team. Now, to your point, this is a huge game for the safeties. We have bemoaned, which I think is the fair representation of our general tone, but also specifically on this topic. We have bemoaned the fact that this team does not have a free safety. What they have are four guys, perhaps five now with Adrian Amos, though I don't know what he is anymore, besides old. They have four guys who want to get into the box and deliver hits. Now, one of them, I'll give Jair Brown some credit. He can bring some thumb.
Coming downhill.
Mustafa absolutely can too. You don't think that Andy Reid's seeing that as well? These guys, the safeties have to make tackles on this team. They have to be treated like linebackers because you have such an issue on the interior of the offensive line or defensive line and at weak side linebacker. And whether it's D Winters, who does play with some fire, but doesn't know what the hell he's doing and misses a lot of tackles because he's never used his arms on a tackle once, which is probably inadvisable, or Devondre Campbell, who's two steps behind on it. He knows what's happening. He just can't respond fast enough.
He's seen it in slow motion and moving in slow motion.
That's a good line. I like that. That's really good. The safeties are required to be a big part of the run game. The Chiefs have Xavier Worthy. I don't think Xavier Worthy is a very good football player, but I do know that boy fast as fuck. And that just seems like a recipe for disaster. If he's running clear outs the whole goddamn game, that's a big issue because at some point, Patrick Mahomes, who could throw a football over them their mountains, is just going to say, fuck it, I'll take it. Because we got one on one.
That's what I had in my column, the old dink and dunk. But the second you don't have a safety make the right decision, you go back to that Baltimore game, safety misses, like he's just going to launch it to Worthy. And again, he might not know what he's doing. He might not have a great skill set, but you put the ball in his hands and he's fast. So that is going to be something. Just at the core, I feel like the Chiefs have like ways to challenge the 49ers that it's not that they're unprepared for, but that they have struggled with. And I'm not fully sold that they will be prepared to stop all game or just enough. And listen, I will say, if you're a vibes person, we've been pretty negative. I will say the vibes at practice were the loosest I've ever seen them. Ricky Pearsall being back has made a noticeable difference. Like, they're joking around. I saw Kyle Juszczyk punt a 55-yarder from his own 35 down inside the 10, which was insane just in practice. So they're loose. They're having fun. Yeah. I don't know if that matters, but if you're a vibes person, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Depends. In this particular game, I'm not a vibes person based on practice. I think the Chiefs are just, they have a team and a coaching staff and an approach that the 49ers will have a hard time stopping. And I think the 49ers' path to victory is to be able to get outside those tackles and run the ball effectively, and for Purdy to maybe have the greatest game of his career. And if they don't
mean to you, what does greatest game of his career mean to, like, walk me through the scenario?
Zero turnovers. He scrambles, huge question when it's open.
Yep.
He trusts the pocket when it's there. And when it's a cover zero blitz, they have a hot answer. It's not necessarily on Purdy. It's they have come up with a better answer on cover zero or other blitzes, just to have a hot answer that is either to the side that it's coming on or where Purdy can escape the pocket, because they've struggled at that. And I think if they have answers to those blitzes and Purdy just keeps it simple, takes the running lanes when they're there, but doesn't just like run outside of the pocket every time, I think that'll be important. Also, they might need like two catches at least in the scramble drill, because they've been absolutely terrible in that regard.
That's right.
I doubt it gets fixed, but they've had a little bit of time. They had a semi-real practice on Thursday. They had a short one on Monday. Maybe that's been an emphasis. I doubt it. But if they can get one or two off-schedule plays like that where they've been terrible, and Pearsall's a guy I think he's been pretty good at in college at off-schedule plays, that can be the difference.
It comes back to man-to-man again, right? Yeah. You're going against cover zero. You got man-to-man on the backside. You need to recognize, one, where the ball needs to go fast, but two, the guy who the ball is going to needs to have some area in which to throw the ball to. And if that guy, if that
hot route in the league, Dieter, and I know that stat is flawed, but it's the worst in the league.
If that hot route is Deebo Samuel, you can't throw the ball there. Full stop. I mean, this is the same issue that they ran up against with Minnesota. It's certainly the same issue they ran up against on Christmas last year with the Baltimore defense. Now, those defenses mix in more zone. It's more of a zone blitz scheme, and they're mixing and matching who's coming and who's going. This is a more straightforward enterprise where it can come from anywhere, but you can see it that there. Man-to-man, again, cover zero versus sort of the conjoined triangles of success, I like to call them.
They'll use DBs a lot.
So the turnover thing is paramount. there's never been a game in the history of football where a team's like, we could turn it over three or four times.
Right.
You know, it's like every NBA preseason. We all want to play fast and shoot threes. Like, no shit. But for Brock, it's absolutely critical in this contest because, again, they're going to be in situations where it's wide receiver versus corner, corners that can absolutely knock these receivers off their games. I think even more so than Brock, it's on the receivers because it was on Brock when you're talking Minnesota. It's on Brock when you're talking about Baltimore because that's Brock recognizing the zone coverage behind. Is it quarters or is it palms with Minnesota specifically? And if you read it wrong, the ball's going the other way. With Brock, there's nothing to read. It is not complicated prose. It's just a question on if the guys can get open enough and Brock can deliver an on-time and on-target ball. And that's just a big question mark. And until I see it, I have a hard time believing it's going to happen.
And guess who their answer is in a lot of those situations? It's Juwan Jennings.
Right.
And he's looking like, we'll see if Shanahan confirms, but it doesn't sound like he's going to go. And third and Juwan is a thing for a reason because he just gets an advantageous matchup and he knows exactly how to win. And if you don't have that, which you're not going to have probably, that's a massive problem.
But you can throw in the rookie who got shot 2 months ago. That might help.
It's a lot to put on him. We're probably going to see a decent amount of Chris Conley too. But
what about Jacob Cowing in this game? Is he just persona non grata? Because I seem to remember him in a lot of one-on-ones running, you know, pretty just straight.
I don't know. Maybe throw both the rookies out there.
Right.
Stuff that the Chiefs haven't seen. Who knows?
And guys who were ostensibly drafted to be able to run this more spread out system where you have to beat guys in man-to-man because they didn't have man-to-man beaters. Now, a fourth round pick versus a first round pick, there should be a differentiation there. But also, you're not asking either of them to come in and carry the workload. In theory, the guy you just gave $30 million to, and in theory, the best tight end in the league should be able to do this. But let's flip it to the other side. Travis Kelce, we all kind of know where he's at in this day and age, yep. Right? He eases his way into a season, and then he shows up. He's in his late-stage Gronk era, where he's out there just to go win the Super Bowl. So about December 15th, December 25th, depending. I think they have, you know, that's when he'll really ramp it up. That's when he starts to become more and more. Wouldn't shock me at all, though, as we've already talked about Campbell, we've talked about the safeties, if this is a big Travis Kelce game, too. Coming off the bye, let's just lay it on him. We can always ramp it down, but you should be fresh. You should be ready to go. I don't know what you and Taylor have been doing over the bye week, but like, let's get down to business here because you could have 10 catches for 147 yards and two touchdowns, and we run these guys off the fucking face of the earth for the fifth time in a row. Like that feels to me like a very viable game plan for Kansas City. Is there anything that the Niners could possibly do to stop Travis Kelce if that is indeed the play?
Just only play only man coverage on him with Warner or Lenore. I mean, that's never going to happen. But like, if you let Kelce, and the Chiefs are one of those teams where like, it's never a quick play. Like, I know they're getting the ball out quicker, but like when you give them a little bit of time, like Kelce's going to find a spot. Mahomes is going to beat you, and you can feel it. You can feel it when Mahomes doesn't go down quickly, and you're like, he's going to find Kelce here. He's just the most elite in the world at finding zone coverage, just finding exactly where that spot is. And he doesn't run routes. He does.
It's all wide choice.
Yeah. How many times does he say, yeah, I was supposed to go here and I went there and then Pat found me? Like, that's just what they do. And Warner's like, talking this week, he's like, it's a nightmare. Like, it's so hard to defend him. That's going to be a problem. I think if they can play a little bit more man on him with Lenore and Warner, but if you don't play Lenore against Worthy, you know, like there's a threat there. I think Renardo Green against Worthy could be really interesting.
That could be fun.
I think Green's got enough speed to keep up with him. I mean, no one can really keep up with him, but like I think he's got enough to run with him.
In theory.
It's a tough challenge. It's a tough challenge. That's the MO for this whole game.
Now at the same time, there is a world, I mean, there's absolutely a world, and I think that it's a more likely world in which Kansas City boat races them. There is also the alternative to where when we are dealing with this sort of ideological conflict, that the Niners are able to run the ball with aplomb outside the tackles. They are able to win in man-to-man.
Yeah.
Brock is able to recognize. And so when now you have man-to-man situations on the outside and Brock's able to recognize it and deliver on time and on target balls, you're going to get some yak. You're going to get a lot of yak. We've already seen Brandon Ayuk, I think back to first half against Arizona. You know, they just 10-yard pass. Well, it turned into like a 50-yard pass because he made one guy miss and it was off to the races. Those opportunities are there. And
their safeties, like Justin Reed, as much as I like him, he's not been great this year. Like he's a little vulnerable. And Cook you're right. If you put them on a platform and there, that opportunity is there too.
And Kansas City's defense is about being sound. If you can exploit the weaknesses, of which there are weaknesses, right? You can go at Shamari Connor in the run game. You want to go at him. You don't have good coverage skills with Cook or Reed, where they're good tacklers. They're really good tacklers. They keep stuff in front of them. But this is a bend but don't break defense. If you force them to blitz again and again and again, and you're able to pick them up, if you're able to keep Chris Jones from absolutely wrecking you because your interior of the offensive line is having a good game. Easier said than done with this defensive line, but still, there is something here for San Francisco. I think this is a referendum on coaching for the 49ers. Can Kyle get, knowing, having the lessons of last year's Super Bowl, understanding that Steve Spagnuolo is not going to throw the exact same thing at him, but probably a lot of the same stuff at him and dare him to win because it's not his MO. Can Kyle come up with the kind of game plan that not only gets them on the board early when they're on script and they've gone through all this stuff at practice, but stays pressing throughout the contest? We haven't really seen that. Yep. And especially not against this kind of defense. Can he out-scheme Steve Spagnuolo? It's a legitimate question because this is now mine versus mine. And on the flip side of this, I mean, you want to talk about a mismatch. I don't know if Nick Sorensen is good or not. I think it is trending towards not good. That's where I'm at right now. Too early to make a determination, but I don't like the way it's heading.
Worst defense in the league when they blitz, which is a concern.
Totally. Now, a lot of that is personnel, to be fair.
Yep.
I'm not sure Nick Sorensen was handed a full deck of cards here and is having to make a flush. But you're going up against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. I don't care how much you like Ben Johnson. What are we talking? This is as good as it gets. And you cannot blitz Mahomes. We have now talked about this forever. You cannot blitz him. You cannot do it. Is Nick Sorensen going to recognize this intrinsic fact of football and
that
not
the 49ers are terrible at blitzing and that the Mahomes kills the blitz? We'll find out.
We'll find out. Can he do enough to schematically help his terrible weak side linebacker, his very questionable defensive interior? He's got a lot of things that he's got to patch up. He's got to go full handyman here. If he can find a way to do it, if he can figure out the nooks and crannies of this Kansas City offense to where he can put his players in advantageous situations, because I'm not going to discredit Nick Sorensen if a guy misses a tackle, but he has these guys have to be in positions to make tackles. And you have to know what play is coming to a certain degree so that your players are in the right position to make plays. And then it's on them. Can he do it? I have not seen any evidence to this point that he can or cannot, but it is very much going to be exploited if he cannot. If he cannot, Andy Reid will find out in the first 5 minutes of this game. Because if there's one thing, we can go on and on about how good these guys are, this and that. This 49ers defense fades. They fade hard. That is a personnel issue.
I was just going to say that second half,
brutal.
Could get dicey.
You have a team that is deeply physical on the offensive side in Kansas City because of the interior of the offensive line, because they have a Mahomes. This is a team, if we're going to get into a 10-round boxing match, this is a team in Kansas City that has now shown consistently, not just this year, but in past years as well, that they will win the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th rounds to steal a decision. So can you put yourself in a position to where not just are you giving yourself the advantage early, but here's what I want to find out with Nick Sorensen, because I know this with Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. Nobody adjusts better. Nobody. I this is not hyperbolic.
That was my biggest criticism of Kyle in the Super Bowl. He didn't adjust.
The 49ers coordinators, one, Kyle doesn't adjust. He doesn't do it. It's his way or no way. He doesn't see what the defense is giving him and adjust. It just isn't, because he thinks that he can win. He thinks he always has the mental upper hand. Sometimes he's wrong. Against Steve Spagnuolo, he is wrong, because Steve is as good as it gets. He is on that level with Kyle when we're talking genius. And as we saw in the Super Bowl, a couple series in, we're just going to play man-to-man. They can't beat it. Turns out they couldn't. And it wasn't always pretty, and the 49ers did get yards. No doubt about it. They had a chance to win that Super Bowl multiple times. But when it came to brass tacks, they put Chris Jones in advantageous situations, and he won, and the 49ers didn't. That's good coordination.
That is where I want to talk about X factors, like my two is like Pearsall, and then can they run the right protections?
Yeah.
Can they? Because Chris Furster talked about how they broke down, and he mentioned the one protection they ran. He's like, yeah, that protection has always been a problem for us. He literally said that this week. And
sometimes you don't have a choice. You have to run that thing.
Sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you don't. But like, that's not what I want to hear. My one last point that we haven't covered, because I think we've covered most of it.
Can I flip on this?
Yep, finish. Yeah.
You also know that Andy Reid is going to adjust better than anybody else. This has been shown time and time again. Okay, we wanted to do all this cool shit. Guess what? We're paring it down. Or we're not able to do the basic stuff that we want to do. We're going to take it over the top. He has adjustments, and not just he has them conceptually. They've been drilled in. They know what they're doing. This offense is built, and it's the reason why they're churning through wide receivers. Because, like, hey, Kadarius Toney, how about you run the fucking play we called? Like, I don't care how talented. Like, you need to run the play. Yep. And Nick Sorensen is going to have to make adjustments in game. It's just a certainty.
I don't know if he can. Actually did pretty well. And like back to 2019, little adjustments fixed it. You know, the Rams ran the ball down their throat early in the season, that 2019 season. He looked at an iPad for 5 minutes and went, okay, this is what's wrong. And then the Rams got shut out for the rest of that game. But like, that's what it takes to be a good coordinator.
It does take the personnel. We have to remind everyone it does take the personnel, and there is a question of execution to scheme. But, I'm sorry, the point you were making beforehand before I cut you off.
No. But on that, like Gannon, his defense is terrible, and they out-scheme the 49ers. So, you know, it comes down to coaching too. The last point I wanted to make, because it wouldn't be this podcast if we did not mention special teams.
Let's do it.
And the 49ers are onto their third kicker in, drumroll please.
I believe that'd be 3 weeks.
Anders Carlson.
There we go.
Folks, you remember Anders Carlson? Dieter, what did Anders Carlson do last year? Last time the 49ers saw him.
Absolutely yanked one.
That helped the 49ers go to the Super Bowl.
That's right. Okay.
So that's their kicker now. And if you think it's not a problem, here is what Kyle Shanahan said when he was asked. He's pretty bad on kickoffs, not getting it through the end zone. Like, how much of a concern is that for you? And Kyle, in true Kyle fashion, because, man, no one hates special teams more than Kyle Shanahan. I truly believe that.
Yeah.
Like, it's so clear his disdain for it. He's like, yeah, no, I don't watch kicker tryouts. No, I don't know. Someone's in charge. He gets like, he's like, ugh, I can't be bothered. When he's asked about all that stuff and is it a concern with Carlson, he goes, everything is a concern. Especially when guys, kickers, are available. If there were zero concerns, I think those guys would be somewhere right now. Which is basically Kyle saying, yeah, there are concerns. They are problematic kickers. They're not good. Otherwise, they'd be a kicker somewhere else. Which, honest, but pretty bleak. Not like exactly a reassuring thing to say about your kicker.
Especially, too, when you see what happened with Jake Moody's injury and not having a kicker, much like, you know, obviously it's better to have a kicker than not have one. But you saw how it just fried Kyle's brain to not have the possibility of kicking a 50-yard field goal. Like, it fucks everything up for him. And it really works with his mojo. Anders Carlson last year, by the way, drafted in the sixth round in 2023. So it's not, I mean, it's sixth round. You can pick 207. You can cut that guy. Right. Don't get me wrong. But they still use draft cap. It wasn't like he won some competition in camp. They brought him in, the Packers, to fix their kicking issues. And he immediately went out and made 81% of his field goals, was 4 for 8 between 40 and 49 yards, 3 for 5 from 50. So somehow better. He missed 5 extra points last year.
And had like a 40-ish percent touchback rate, which if you're the 49ers, you need a touchback every time on kickoff coverage because, one, you're not good at kickoff coverage, and two, your kicker might have to make the tackle because you are so bad and he might get hurt and you might need a fourth kicker.
Well, like, when they end up with the fourth kicker, I think Buffalo might have signed him. I haven't checked. But Harrison Mevis, the thicker kicker from Missouri, would be a very good option because you wouldn't
I'm also available. I've kicked a 50-yarder once with the wind at my back.
Yeah.
So I'm saying
you could do worse than the thicker kicker in that you wouldn't feel so bad about him being the 11th man in kick return coverage.
Or let Juice kick it off. And then you just have a giant bowling ball. You just have another guy who's actually able to tackle, you know, in coverage.
I wouldn't be shocked if they had Mitch kick off in this game. But he's not very good at it either.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
I think we have to make a prediction here.
Yeah, I got one. I got one loaded up.
What do you got?
Chiefs 27, 49ers 23.
That is a very, very good one. I'm going to go with a lower scoring game. I'm going to go, as I said earlier this week, you might have caught it, a little bit of an Easter egg, Chiefs 24, Niners 23. So I'm taking a field goal off the board. And I feel like this game, we will point back to it if they win every week forever. As if they raise a banner for winning in week 7.
Right.
And this team will be off to the races if they win this game. You want to talk about vibes? Whole buddy.
Yep.
If they lose this game, we are, I don't think, right back into, oh, fuck, energy. Because let's not forget, last Wednesday, they were very much in a, oh, it is our season on the line.
Right. It was.
It was. I don't think that's the case if they lose this game. Right. I really don't. Because they'll be 3-4.
And I think if they lose, they're more likely to beat the Cowboys. And if they win, they're less likely, just as a nature of that.
That is also factual, though you are well on the record and you cannot duck out of it now that they'll beat the Cowboys.
They will.
But we get back into the week-to-week grinder of things. Whereas if the Niners do this, they now have a little bit of cachet. They got a little bit of collateral that they can play around with to where, okay, you lose to Dallas. Well, okay, you're going in. That's fine. Now we're
totally
in the week-to-week.
But we beat the Chiefs, though.
We beat the Chiefs, so you can't tell us that we're not going to be in it come the end.
That is,
it's kind of fool's gold. Right?
I'm with you. It's like, right? That's how I started my column. It's like you win, and you know you're 4-3, and okay, you finally got the monkey off your back.
The greatest
right?
4-3 team in the history of the NFL. We're going to win the Super Bowl. We beat the Chiefs 100%. In Week 7 in Santa Clara, California. To be fair, off a bye, that matters.
Going to get out over your skis a little bit, but that's okay. If you beat the Cowboys, suddenly you're 5-3 and you're like, we're doing it. We're doing it.
In this conference, hell yeah.
If you lose, you go, are you ever capable of beating the Chiefs? Yeah. And you'll probably tell yourself no. Could we maybe do it with Christian McCaffrey back? Maybe. Only questions. You're just going to have questions the rest of the season. Are they real? Are they not? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just going to be that. I just went back to Trent Williams' answer on it. 49ers, like when they're asked about this whole thing, they were basically like, yeah, we've never beaten them. So they gave them a lot of deference. But yeah. Trent's like, he's like, we could beat them by 100. We're not popping champagne. Confetti's not going to fall. So it can never be a payback situation. So like, why even carry that grudge? I think that's a pretty healthy perspective. That said, if they lose, it's going to feel like they've lost the Super Bowl again. It's not going to feel exactly the same way, but that sort of scar tissue, it's going to pull that back out. And as much as you can say, it's just a game, they just lost, it's going to cut real, real deep.
Think back to last December, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and what happened to the Eagles after they lost that game to the 49ers. Oh, okay, it's not a perfect analog. It's not. But that team, in an almost far too literal way, fell apart from that
broken sense.
And they have never gotten it back. These are the kind of cuts that force you to bleed out. You cannot cauterize it. You cannot patch it. You cannot bandage it. This is how you bleed out. And right now you have a team that I don't care how good the vibes were this week. I can appreciate it. I can say that that's a good thing or a bad thing. The results are all that matter. Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are. This is a team that you mentioned questions. They got a ton of them, not just for this game, but overall. Where do we go from here? Who's the core? What is our identity? Do we even have a good defensive coordinator? There's a lot of stuff in flux with this operation, and they have a lot of contracts that could end up looking really fucking bad at the end of the season. And now you got to pay Brock. This thing can get way messier than it's already been. And this has been the messiest season in recent memory. If they lose this, because now the connective tissue of we're still the best, we just need some time, stuff hasn't happened, that gets torn away pretty fucking fast. And now fingers start to get pointed. And then
you got to go on the road to Green Bay and Buffalo in the second half of this.
Shit, you got to go on the road to Tampa Bay after a bye week. You know, like there's no easy games from here on out. Maybe the Rams on a Thursday. It sounds like Tua's coming back. Arizona week 18. That was an easy game. You just lost to them. The schedule from this point on: Kansas City, Dallas, bye week, Tampa Bay, Seattle, at Green Bay, at Buffalo. That's bookending Thanksgiving. Enjoy the holiday. Chicago and their defense and their quarterback who looks better and better. The Rams on a short week, at Miami following that. Detroit on Monday Night Football in week 17. And finally, the Arizona Cardinals.
That is all to say, just on a closing note, we made a lot of points here, looked at a lot of data points. We watched a lot of tape. We've prepped a lot. That's all to come back to this this final and very important point. Pretty big game. Pretty big game, Dieter.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Again, they don't raise a banner in week 7, but you can certainly cancel the deposit on one in week 7. So that's how we're going to play it. All right, Jake, I would like to applaud you first and foremost. We did a podcast in under an hour, buddy.
Look at us.
Looking forward to Sunday night. I'm sure we'll have ample things to talk about.
That's right. Locked in.